Emily.
You forget. I've seen your attempt at cooking, Ravi returns. Besides, from what my son tells me, Misha will not stop talking about you. You are doing them a favor by joining them for dinner, if only to appease Misha.
The rickshaw drives us to their village. The asphalt turns into an unpaved road. A cluster of huts sits apart from larger shacks. Stacks of garbage are piled in front of each home. The dwellings spill over one another, with little space in between. A long line of women wait their turn at the water pump. They each carry two buckets apiece to fill. While waiting, they talk and laugh with one another. Children run free in the streets, dust kicking into the air with their play. Ravi leads me to a smaller group of shacks.
It is more affordable housing.
A curtain covers the entrance, where a door should have been. He pushes it aside before announcing,
"We are here."
Immediately, two men come forward. Dressed in traditional clothes, each one clasps his hands together.
"Namaste. Welcome," Ravi's son says.
He's a younger version of his father, whereas Ravi's grandson looks like Amit. In stilted English, the grandson says,
"Thank you for coming."
"Thank you for having me." I stare at Ravi's son, imagining Ravi when my grandmother was alive. I clasp my hands together and bow slightly to the two women who hang back, watching.
"Namaste.
You have a beautiful home." Mud blocks create the walls, and a thatched roof covers the small hut. Torn bedsheets and a worn rug cover the hard floor made of cement. A half wall separates the kitchen and living room. There is only one chair, and several pillows are scattered on the floor. A narrow opening leads to a hall where two small rooms face each other.
"Ravi Dada speaks so highly of you,"
Misha and Amit's grandmother says. Her daughter-in-law remains quiet.
"You have honored us with your presence."
A shriek of joy interrupts us. Misha comes barreling from the room down the hall, with Amit close behind. She runs right into my arms. I hold her close, touched by her happiness and grateful to be spending time with her.
"We've been waiting all day," she says.
I tighten my arms around her and run my hand down her hair.
"I helped Mummy and Grandmother cook."
"I can't wait to eat what you've made."
With Misha still in my arms, I glance at Amit, who stands quietly to the side.
"Namaste, Beta."
"Welcome,"
he says in perfect English.
"Would you like a tour?"
I slip my hand into Misha's as Amit shows me their humble home. There are three small rooms in addition to the kitchen. We end the tour in the main room, where more than a dozen glazed pottery vases are stacked in the corner. An embroidered rug hangs on one wall, with the tale of Krishna depicted in the artwork.
"My daughter-in-law makes them," Ravi says, when he notices me admiring the pottery. "May I?"
At her nod, I run my hands over the ceramic. "They're amazing." Each one is painted in dark hues of blue and purple. She watches as I sort through them, admiring the detailed color schemes.
"These are garas,"
she says, pointing to the water pots I'm admiring.
"Surahis, pitchers, and gumlas, flower pots."
Each has a different design, with figures of elephants, birds, and serpents adorning them.
"She helps the family pay for the house and food with her work," Ravi says. "She's an exceptional artist, yes?"
"Yes," I say. "Your work is extraordinary." She picks out the best one and then hands it to me.
"You keep," she says.
"No, I couldn't." I hand it back to her. When she pushes it back to me, I look to Ravi for help.
It is a gift,
Ravi says, pleased with the exchange.
She has never given one away before. You should feel privileged.
Thank you. I reach out and give her a hug. She hesitates and seems surprised, but then returns my embrace. I will treasure it. I follow the women into the kitchen, where a small kerosene stove burns. In the sitting area, Ravi's son puffs on a vegetable leaf, hand-rolled and filled with tobacco. As everyone starts to gather the food for dinner, I ask if I can help.
You are the guest, Ravi's daughter-in-law says. Please, only enjoy.
After dinner, I can give you a tour of the neighborhood, Amit says, joining us. There is much to see.
As they start to take dishes out to the main room, I insist on helping. Misha grabs a plate of appetizers. She walks carefully with it into the main room. She stumbles twice, but shakes her head when Amit moves to help her. Nonetheless, he follows her out. Both her mother and grandmother watch her carefully until she makes it into the main room. She's beautiful, I say.
Thank you, her grandmother says, out of Misha's hearing range. She is our God-given angel.
She smiles.
Come, let us eat.
In the main room, atop a bedsheet, they've placed the food dishes and plates. The men are seated cross-legged. There's a small chair for Misha. I take a seat next to her and cross my legs like the others. Amit settles next to Ravi. Amit's mother passes around the food, and everyone fills their plate. Bowls are filled with mint and ginger water. There's a pan of mixed vegetables sautéed in a cream sauce and a plate of warm naan. I rip off a piece of naan and scoop the vegetables, savoring the spicy concoction.
Homemade buttermilk?
Ravi's daughter-in-law offers me a glass of thick white liquid.
Thank you.
I take a sip of the creamy liquid to help cool the spicy food. It's delicious, like the rest of the meal. I really appreciate your having me over.
It was our honor.
Ravi's son ruffles Amit's hair.
My grandson tells us you are a reporter.
Yes. I wink at Misha, who slips her hand into mine. I know Misha plans on becoming a teacher. But what about you, Amit? I ask, smiling at him.
He should be a reporter, Misha answers for her brother. Like you.
The whole group laughs, her admiration never more apparent.
I haven't decided.
Amit falls quiet and is suddenly reserved. Ravi glances at him, but says nothing.
All he's ever wanted to be is a doctor,
Amit's mother says, her love for him radiating.
He wants to help other children, like his sister.
Mummy, no,
Amit says, shaking his head at her.
It is not possible.
The room goes quiet. Amit's father drops his head and focuses on eating.
Amit, why won't you be able to become a doctor? I ask. He has top grades, but it is not always easy to get admission to university,
Amit's mother says for him.
Mummy, I can do something else.
He fidgets with his napkin and then pushes away his half-eaten plate of food.
I will find something else.
I think about the young woman I met on the tour. I describe her experience and then wait, my unspoken question hanging in the air.
India is a vast country, Ravi explains, with no man or woman having the same experience. Every day we move forward. That is what gives me hope.
But when he glances at Amit, I see the concern of a parent and a palpable yearning for a better future for his loved one. What would you choose? I ask Amit when the room falls silent.
Maybe reporting,
he says, and everyone laughs, lightening the mood. I think back to when I announced I wanted to be a journalist. My mother questioned my decision, but nonetheless paid for my education and celebrated my every success. Before the miscarriages, my battles were minimal, but whenever I was faced with disappointment, my parents were silent stanchions standing by my side. My mother's admission that she only wanted my happiness gave me a glimpse of what it means to be a parent who only wants the best for his child. Unsure what to say, I quietly finish my meal. Amisha, 38.
Papa is home!
Paresh cried out in excitement as they neared the house and saw a light. With a break in the rain, Amisha and Bina had taken the boys out for some kulfi. Jay and Samir ran after their brother into the house. Amisha hadn't seen Deepak since before Ravi's accident. She felt another wave of guilt for what had happened between her and Stephen. But just as it was impossible to stop the rains that came every year, it was impossible to quell her feelings for him. Without the benefit of choice, the only decision she could make was to care for Stephen while continuing in her duty to Deepak. She smoothed the front of her shirt, seeking courage from the simple movement. She raised her head and followed her children inside.
"And then I played cricket with Samir, and I won."
Paresh was in his father's arms, relaying everything Deepak had missed in his absence. Jay and Samir were standing alongside their father, smiling up at him.
"Welcome back."
Amisha stared at her husband, as if seeing him for the first time. In her brief interlude with Stephen, she had felt like a woman. She felt worthy and capable, and just for a moment believed she had a purpose. Now, with Deepak's return, she wondered how she could return to the reality that demanded she stay in her place. She imagined announcing she couldn't, and that if given a choice, she wanted something else. Just then, Samir shouted at his brother, jolting her from her thoughts. Watching them, she knew no matter what choice she might have, she would never make that call.
"Can I prepare dinner for you?"
she asked, falling seamlessly into her role.
"I ate on the train,"
Deepak said quietly, staring at her.
"Where were you?"
There was a bite to his tone that Amisha had never heard before. Her tongue felt heavy, and sweat pooled in her bra. Had he found out what had happened? But she knew Stephen would never betray her.
"I took the boys out for treats."
He picked up a package off the settee and tossed it to her.
"For you."
Surprised, Amisha opened it. Inside, neatly folded, was an extravagant sari, a type she had seen only in movies.
"It is beautiful,"
her voice trembling, she asked.
"What is the occasion?"
He made no reply, instead passing out gifts to the boys. Amisha watched him, sensing something was wrong. A quick scan of the house assured her nothing was amiss. Bina shrugged her shoulder when Amisha glanced at her in question.
"Your trip went well?"
Amisha asked, unsure.
"Are the presents a celebration?"
"Do I need cause to spend money on my family?"
he demanded.
"We are grateful."
Amisha had never seen him like this. She wrapped a protective arm around her boys.
"Right, boys?"
"Bina, watch the children,"
Deepak said, before the boys could answer.
"Amisha, let us speak in the other room."
Amisha gave the boys a reassuring smile before following him in and shutting the door. Off the desk, Deepak held a sheet of paper out to her.
"This is what you are doing with your time at school? Teaching children to wish for death?"
Amisha knew, without looking, that it was Nima's final story about choices. She had been reading it earlier and left it on the desk. She watched in horror
as he tore it to pieces and threw them at her feet.
"What did you do?" she cried as she gathered the pieces. "If the parents learn you're filling the youngster's mind with this kind of garbage, we will be destroyed in the community." His voice rose with fury. "Do you have any idea what you've done?"
Outside the bedroom door, the sounds of the boys playing ceased as Deepak's roar reverberated. Amisha finished gathering the pieces and laid them on the desk. The girl was heartbroken about her marriage. She was playing with words.
"Who was the girl?" Deepak demanded.
Amisha fought her sudden nausea.
"Nima."
His face filled with fury.
"The girl who set herself on fire."
He would have heard about the girl from gossip. He glanced away before returning with his verdict.
"You will no longer teach at the school."
"What?"
Amisha clutched her stomach, pain searing through her at his words.
"The students count on me. Please, I must."
"The decision is made."
He scooped the pieces off the desk and threw them into a wastebasket.
"You will not jeopardize our family."
Amisha barely slept all night. Her thoughts were of Stephen, the school, and everything lost with just a few words from Deepak. In the morning, she fed the children their breakfast and was seeing them off when Ravi arrived.
"You're up early," Ravi commented. "Normally you are running around screaming that everyone will be late while the children are laughing at the spectacle you create."
"Normally, I would tell you what to do with your thoughts, but since you nearly died, I find myself grateful that you are here to speak."
Amisha didn't tell him that she had been up all night thinking about Deepak's decision, or that her heart ached at the thought of not teaching at the school and seeing Stephen. Ravi handed Deepak his jacket and tiffin of food. Her husband slipped on his shoes, then left without a goodbye to Amisha. Ravi, noticing the silence, waited until the door was shut behind Deepak before turning to her.
"Why are you not attending school today?"
"He found the story," Nima wrote. "I'm no longer allowed to teach at the school," Amisha whispered.
"Srimati."
In his voice was all the sorrow that Amisha hadn't allowed herself to feel.
"He could not be convinced?"
"No."
Amisha scribbled a note to Stephen, detailing the assignments for the children. She slid it into her satchel, along with the children's graded stories, and held it out to Ravi.
"Would you please take this to Stephen?"
"What reason should I give him for your absence?" Ravi asked.
She hadn't seen Stephen since 3 nights ago, when he fed her the meal. Now, she wondered when they would meet again.
"Tell him..."
Words failed her. The truth would tell Stephen what they both already knew, that she belonged to another.
"That Deepak is back, and he needs me at home."
"If he asks about the date of your return..."
Sympathy shone from Ravi's eyes.
"That I will return, if I am able," she said,
knowing the decision rested in Deepak's hands. Amisha stood on the porch and watched Ravi walk toward the school. When he was out of sight, she went back inside the house and shut the door. Ravi returned with a note from Stephen. With shaking fingers, Amisha opened it. "Amisha, Ravi told me the news, but I fear there is more he did not wish to say. Until I know more, I will trust the delivered message. The children will miss their teacher, and I will miss our tutoring sessions. The garden already seems emptier without your smile and laughter gracing it. When you are able to return, your classroom will be waiting, as will I. Stephen." Amisha clutched the letter and read it a dozen more times
before writing her own back to him. With a broken heart, she admitted the real reason, telling him in words what she couldn't say in person. In ending, she told him that more than he could imagine, she would miss her students and their tutoring. Ravi delivered the letter immediately, and from then on, for 2 weeks, they wrote each other daily, with Ravi as the messenger. The letters started to get longer and filled with more honesty. Though not a replacement for their conversations, they served as a balm for Amisha's loneliness. She missed him every day. The emptiness left in his wake created a deep chasm within her. But if their letters were the only way she could hear his voice and know his thoughts, she would take them with gratitude. To keep herself busy, she began walking with Paresh daily. 2 weeks after Deepak's decision, Amisha was in the village when she heard a commotion. Women were rushing toward the edge of town. Men called out for people to follow. "What is it?" Amisha demanded of a passerby who rushed to join the throng.
"The British have a man in custody."
Amisha scooped Paresh up and followed the pack to the outskirts of the village. There, in the midst of a large crowd, she spotted Stephen. The sight of him jolted her. The horde had circled him and other members of the British military. In the foreground stood a group of Indian men, all handcuffed to one another.
"Under the laws of the British Empire, you are under arrest."
Stephen held tight to a frail Indian man. Infantrymen continued to handcuff others.
"You have no place in this country," the man returned. In hopes of riling up the crowd, he yelled, "They are arresting me for breaking their rules in our country."
The roar was swift and loud. The crowd began shouting protests. Some of the teenagers picked up rocks and began to throw them. When one hit Stephen, Amisha cried out in distress.
"What happened?"
she asked a woman standing next to her. Her heart raced as the teenagers continued to throw rocks at the officers.
"That man there," she said, pointing to the one who had spoken, "started speaking about Gandhi's words of freedom. An officer ordered him to stop when a crowd gathered. He refused and was arrested."
"Was he beaten?" Blood dripped from the man's forehead.
"He fought them," the woman explained. "One of the officers hit him with his stick."
Amisha didn't ask which of the officers hit him. She knew Stephen would have to act, but she didn't want to know whether he was the one who raised his hand to her countrymen. The officers grabbed the offending teenagers and restrained them. When their parents started to protest and fight, the British began to strike out randomly, hitting both women and men in their effort to control the crowd.
"No."
Amisha covered her mouth in horror. She brought Paresh close, trying to shield him from the view. When a full riot broke out, Amisha picked Paresh up to leave. Just then, Stephen's eyes met hers. In them, she saw his confusion and questions. Not having an answer, she gazed at him for a few more seconds before walking away. 39.
"You haven't seen him in weeks," Ravi said.
While Amisha darned holes in the boy's clothes, Bina brought in buckets of water to wash dishes.
"Is that why the letters are so heavy, that my back is sure to break from carrying them?"
"If your back is so weak that it can break from letters, then it is deserved."
Amisha missed her mark and pricked her finger with the needle instead. She stuck her finger into her mouth.
"If I go to the school, I worry about what Deepak will say."
She set the darning down.
"And every day that I don't speak to Stephen, I feel alone, though surrounded by my family and friends."
"You care for him," Ravi said, not asking.
"More than I should."
Amisha had not seen him since the day of the riot. She had heard from other villagers that they had arrested more than a dozen men and teenagers. It was hard for her to see him as the officer she knew he was. She missed the man she knew him to be in the garden. In a letter following the riot, Stephen spoke about his place in the country and his purpose. Though he didn't apologize for his actions, Amisha could detect his regret and confusion.
When I married, I was only told of responsibility and duty.
Shrugging, she stared out the window.
Maybe that's all I'm allowed.
What do you hope for? Ravi asked. With him?
If I were a child, I would dream of a future, she admitted slowly. But I am not, nor am I foolish enough to believe I can have anything but what is given to me by fate.
She wrung her hands together.
Deepak is the only future I can know.
Before Ravi could respond, Deepak returned from making his social rounds in the village. Amisha waited until the other servants were in the kitchen. Then she sought the right words.
It has been weeks since I've been at the school. It is time for me to go back.
Why? Deepak asked absently. Vikram mentioned the lieutenant is leaving. I'm sure the new head of school will find someone else to teach your class.
What? Amisha faltered, her hands shaking. She was sure she had misheard him.
When?
He is to leave immediately.
Deepak picked up the paper and briefly glanced at the news.
It seemed he requested a transfer. He is leaving for the front lines of the war.
Amisha's heart slowed between beats. She saw Ravi glance at her and knew he saw the hurt and shock she barely showed. Deepak, oblivious to her reaction, said,
I have been away from the business for too long. I'm scheduled to leave on the train tonight. Maybe you and the children would enjoy a visit with your parents.
Go to my parents?
Amisha asked in a daze.
No.
She had to see Stephen and ask him what had happened.
I cannot go.
What? Deepak asked. Why?
It is a...
She stumbled over the words, unsure.
The boys have plans to stay at the house with us tonight, Ravi said, interjecting before Deepak suspected anything. They have been very excited, looking forward to being spoiled by my wife and parents.
Ravi's parents had become surrogate grandparents to the boys over the years.
Another time, then.
Deepak glanced at the clock.
I'll have to hurry to make the next train.
Once he had packed, Amisha waited by the door and watched him leave in the rickshaw.
I will take the children to my house for the night, Ravi said quietly.
Ravi? Amisha asked, unsure.
Go and ask him why, Ravi said quietly. You will not rest easy until you do.
Amisha stood in her empty house after Ravi left with the children. Her stomach turned. Thoughts in her head spun past one another, each one more urgent than the last. It seemed only yesterday she was begging for Deepak's permission to teach at the school. That desperation felt trivial now. Then she was fighting for her mind. Now she was trying to hold on to her soul. The emptiness mocked her. The bedroom reminded her of her short interlude with Stephen. She could still see him in the kitchen from when he shared a meal with her family. No matter where she turned, he called to her. She tried to ignore thoughts of him fighting in the war. If he lost his life in the war, how could she continue with hers? She waited until it was dark before leaving her house so no one would see her. She had to beg him not to go. She ran toward his home. Once there, Amisha took a deep breath. The last time she had stood on Stephen's doorstep, She had been frantic to save her friend's life. Now she was here to save her own. Her stomach tensed as she knocked on the door. She started to call his name when he opened the door.
Amisha, what are you doing here?
His face tightened with concern when he saw her anguish.
May I come in?
She moved past him into the small house. Built only months before the school, it had many of the same modern conveniences. She swiped at her tears.
Amisha, tell me what's wrong, he said softly.
She saw the towel in his hand.
You were getting ready to bathe.
She was desperate to continue with small talk, anything to avoid the conversation that would have him speak the truth, because once he said it, there would be no turning back, no way to undo the damage to her heart. Amisha had lived in the shadows for most of her life. She had hidden her dream of writing as if it were a curse to be ashamed of. She bore Deepak's sons and sated his needs, but the tales in her would not die. When she wrote, she was transported to a place where she discovered who she was but could never be. Then Stephen came into her life. He offered her a freedom she hadn't imagined. He valued her words and encouraged her voice. Her life since childhood had been about doing what was expected. He gave her another choice. With that choice, she cared for him. On the night of Ravi's injury, she accepted she needed him. But now, she had nothing to give him to make him stay, to show him she loved him. He threw his towel on a chair and ran his hands through his hair before clasping them behind his neck. She saw his anguish, and hers doubled with it.
I thought I was imagining your voice.
Amisha stepped closer to him.
They said you were leaving.
He shut his eyes and moved away, unwilling to face her.
I have to,
he said, his voice catching.
Why?
Amisha demanded.
India. He paused and swallowed deeply. I don't belong here. This is not my fight.
The day of the riot, she had seen his confusion and disgust, his people against hers. She knew she and Stephen couldn't keep going as they were, letters and random sightings. He was young and deserved to live his life. She had nothing to offer him.
Were you going to tell me? Amisha whispered. You were the only person I didn't know how to tell, he said with a broken laugh. Not seeing you every day.
He shook his head, and Amisha saw his pain.
I have missed you.
He paused.
But we both know there are no choices. You could die, she said on a sob. No.
He reached out, but stopped before touching her.
I promise you, I will not.
Amisha took him at his word and clung to the promise. But life had not always proven fair, and she knew it might be the last time she would ever see him. To turn away from her feelings would be dishonoring him and what they meant to each other. She was tired of living life within the boundaries set for her. She grasped the front of her sari above her breast and pulled. The silk fluttered to the floor. Soon she was bare, but for her blouse and the skirt she wore under her sari.
Stephen, she said,
reaching for him. He turned, his eyes widening at the sight before him. She stood, exposed and vulnerable, calling to him in the only way she knew how.
No.
He said, his fingers curled into fists at his side.
Don't do this.
Should I beg? She asked, her hands limp at her sides. He covered her mouth with his fingers. His hands fell to her neck, taking the freedom she gave him to touch her. She moaned, and he crushed her to him, sighing when her body was fully against his. He fit against her perfectly,
and she molded to his body. He kissed her, and she opened her mouth. She matched his thrusts, tangling her hands in his hair to bring his head into alignment. The need to be bare against him overwhelmed her, and she began to undo the buttons of his shirt. Amisha instinctively knew that Stephen would welcome her need to touch him and to see his body. She explored the skin she exposed, and when at last she had the shirt off, she lost herself in the hair on his chest. It was coarse and soft at the same time, and she bent forward to kiss him.
"Did I hurt you?"
Amisha moved away when Stephen sucked in his breath.
"Definitely not," he brought her back.
She touched him in all the ways she wanted to be caressed. She felt his hitch in breathing when her fingers danced across his stomach. She savored the strength of his arms and the gentleness of his hands. When she reached the buckle on his pants, she hesitated, unsure and shy. He took her hands and brought them up to kiss. Then he unbuttoned her blouse and unhooked her bra, freeing her into his palms. She felt the tears pool in her eyes and saw his tears swimming beneath his eyelids. He undressed her slowly, bearing her to him. When she was naked, he kissed her again.
"We can do this."
He lifted her into his arms, ready to carry her into the bedroom. "Yes," she answered, sure she could, because right then she refused to belong to those who had claimed ownership of her, not to the father and mother who bore her and decided her partner for the rest of her years, not to the husband to whom she had been passed for the sake of bearing children and keeping house, not to the expectation steeped within her. For one night, she would belong to herself. When he laid her on the bed, she opened her arms, welcoming him. When he separated her thighs with his knees, she moved them farther apart and encircled his waist, waiting for him to enter. As he crossed her barrier and lost himself within her, she saw the shadows clear and the light finally shine. Amisha and Stephen spent the rest of the night together. He turned to her twice more in the darkness, and she awakened him early in the morning with kisses on his neck. He pulled her over him and encouraged her to experiment. She was shy in the morning light, anxious about exposing her body to him. He responded by tracing the lines of her stretch marks from her 3 pregnancies. She showered in his tub, relishing the indoor facility. While she dressed, he prepared breakfast. She barely touched her food.
"Amisha,"
Stephen sat down next to her.
"Is this goodbye?"
she asked, tears streaming down her face. Tired and worn, with few choices, he said,
"After the war, I will try to come back."
"Then what?"
she asked, scared for him and for herself.
"I will still be married."
"I know,"
he said gently. Left with no other answer, she kissed him softly. He deepened the kiss and held her for as long as he could before she left him, sitting there, and returned home to wait for her children. 40. Every new day brought exhaustion. After Stephen's departure, Amisha received word that the school no longer needed her services. The days turned to weeks, and she spent more time in bed. Ravi and Bina were at her bedside regularly, bringing her food and medicine from the local holistic doctor. 6 weeks after her joining with Stephen, she began to vomit. She rushed from the bed and heaved near the outhouse until her stomach was empty. Ravi handed her a glass of water and wet towel.
"Srimati,"
looking uncomfortable, Ravi moved closer to her.
Has the time come to celebrate?
Celebrate? Realizing what he meant, Amisha collapsed against the wall of the house, using the support to keep her steady.
I am with child, she choked, her hand over her stomach.
Her symptoms suddenly made sense. Having given birth 3 times before, she couldn't believe she had missed the signs.
Sab will be pleased? Ravi asked.
The question burned between them. Amisha stared at him. Ravi was the only one who knew her feelings for Stephen.
It is not his.
Happiness flowed through her. She had lost Stephen, but with his child, she would have a part of him forever.
When you took the children to your house,
it seemed another time when Amisha had lain beneath Stephen, given him her body long after he had taken her heart.
Before he left.
Rest, he urged.
To his credit, he didn't comment on her revelation, but Amisha knew he would keep her secret.
You must think of the child.
I have to...
She paused. She thought of her boys, and the truth behind her situation hit her.
Srimati?
Ravi stood near her, caught off guard by the ashen look on her face.
Deepak can never find out.
She stared at him, wild-eyed and desperate.
My children, what have I done?
She fell to the ground, both hands protecting her unborn. Amisha planned Deepak's arrival home meticulously, but with every step, she was weighed down by the burden of her deception. Her options were limited, however. If Deepak knew what she had done, regardless of the pregnancy, she would be thrown to the streets. No matter where Stephen was, she still loved him. That was the only explanation she had for her heart-wrenching ache whenever she thought of him. But she was first and always a mother. To fail her boys would be to fail the only responsibility the heavens had given her. She refused to do that, so instead, she waited for Deepak to return to set her plan in motion. When he arrived 2 days later, she was ready.
You are very active tonight,
Deepak said, when Amisha entered their room. She had put the boys to bed early and sent the servants, including Ravi, home after dinner.
Am I not allowed to show pleasure at my husband's return?
Amisha brushed her hair in front of the small mirror.
You are?
Deepak watched her with renewed appreciation. As she had hoped, he took her subtle cue and approached her, taking the brush from her hands.
The servants mentioned you had been ill.
The servants worry too much, she said.
He closed the door and reduced the oil in the lamp. He undressed her, slipped into bed, and motioned wordlessly for her to join him. Amisha tempered her memories of the last time she had lain with a man. She had forced to the deep recesses of her mind how Stephen had held her. Now she prepared for Deepak's touch. Her unborn child was the gift to her from the night she spent with Stephen. Amisha loosened her sari and slipped under the covers. She felt the cool length of his body against the warmth of her own. When his hand traveled below her breast, she gently pulled it back up. She could not chance his feeling the slight swell of her belly. If he noticed, he did not comment. In seconds, he was ready and brought her underneath him.
It is time, Amisha murmured when he prepared to enter her.
For?
He questioned, pausing.
A child. The boys are eager for a little one to tease.
She waited with bated breath for him to comment. He nodded with a grin, and when he slipped through her dryness, she moaned in pain into the pillow. He began to stir, and she sent a silent call to the heavens above. As his sperm traveled within her, she pled for his essence to penetrate the fluid surrounding the baby. She begged that his sperm join the child in her womb, permeating the protective layer surrounding the fetus. Her hope was that the baby would absorb Deepak's characteristics, thus feeling familiar to him on its arrival into the world. And the child would see Deepak as its true father, leaving no memory or longing for the real father who would never learn of its existence. 41. 6 months into her pregnancy, the fatigue had begun to take a toll. She had vomited twice already that morning. She nibbled on biscuits and ginger water in hopes of keeping the nausea at bay. 1 foot on the ground, she swung back and forth on the settee. "The boys left for school early," she said to Ravi. Deepak had left on the train 3 days prior. He'd rarely been home for the duration of the pregnancy, though Amisha barely noticed.
"Was everything all right?" "They woke up early to the sound of your heaving and dressed faster than ever before," Ravi said, refilling her water. "I fear they have not mastered the concept of empathy yet."
Amisha mustered a smile for him right before another wave of nausea hit her. Grimacing, she rubbed her hand over her slightly swollen belly. "Maybe I am being punished for my deceit."
"Do you believe that this is punishment?"
Ravi placed a bowl near her in case she vomited again. Amisha thought about Stephen and the child they had created. Their love had been powerful enough to create life, and that life was their bond.
"If it is, then I welcome it. Any price is worth having known him." "Then you are fortunate, Srimati," Ravi said. "Few know the value of what they are given."
He gathered the soiled clothes and tossed them into a basket to wash.
"I'll be in the back if you need me."
"Thank you, Ravi." Amisha laid her head against the pillows. Bina and another servant had both stayed home today due to illness, so when the knock at the door came, she was the only one home to open it.
"1 minute,"
Amisha said loudly, so the visitor could hear. She wiped her hands of crumbs, then opened the door. The sight of Stephen made her legs buckle, and her eyes welled up with tears. Her hand gripped her chest as pain ripped through her.
"You're here."
Sure he was an illusion, she reached out and grabbed his hand while they stared at each other. His hair was longer than before, and his face was thinner. But the eyes that held hers were the same.
"I'm here."
He came fully into the house and closed the door behind him. "Deepak is traveling." His eyes held hers.
"Yes?"
Amisha soaked up the sight of him. She had to convince herself that he was not a hallucination, that her mind, from the deep recesses of the grief that had gripped her since his departure, had not conjured him as a means of survival.
"It cannot be you."
"I'm here, Amisha." Stephen gently held her by the shoulders, his gaze running over her face.
"Is anyone home?"
When Amisha shook her head no, he pulled her in, closing the distance between them. She dropped her head to his chest, her soul anxious to lessen the burden that had sat heavy on it since his departure. He cupped the back of her head and lowered another hand to her waist. The sound of his racing heart echoed in her ear. She willed her own to settle down. The first tears soaked his shirt, but soon she began to cry and shake with sobs that had been stifled ever since he left.
"Shh."
He tried to console her, but there was nothing he could say to lessen her pain. She had worried about him throughout the day and at night had dreamed of him in faraway places.
"You left me,"
she cried, the memories haunting her.
"I broke without you."
Amisha. He started to speak when he felt the soft swell of her waist beneath her sari. What? The question was in his eyes as he began to take her sari off. No. She tried to step back, but he held fast. She knew he felt the difference from the night they were together. Whose is it? He stared at her swollen stomach. Amisha stood at a crossroads, though only one path was hers to take. Stephen was the only man she loved and would ever want. Before she met him, she had accepted her life's course, but he had allowed her to dream. He was her soul, and she was tearing it apart. Deepak. No. He turned away. I'm sorry. Amisha cried the tears he was unable to. This child deserves its father, Stephen answered, defeated. I love you, Amisha admitted. My love for you is irrelevant. Your love is my salvation, she gasped, trying to speak through the sob lodged in her throat. The child she carried was a gift from their union, offering her a part of him and yet forcing her to live without him. I have to go. He stepped back, giving her the distance she had asked for only moments before. Where? Amisha needed to know where he would be when not with her. I don't know. Back home? His eyes strayed toward Amisha's stomach. I only came back to see you. Stephen moved toward the door, his hand blindly reaching for the knob. Wait. She swiped at her tears as she rushed toward the bedroom. From beneath the bed, she pulled the stack of stories. Every written word that came from her was in a neat pile. All the tales from her heart, both in English and Hindi. From the doorway of her bedroom, she stared at him. She knew she would never see him again, so she imprinted to memory his every nuance and feature. With measured steps, trying to hold off the inevitable, she returned to him and held out the papers. What is this? He stared at the bundle through the moisture in his eyes. My stories. No. He tried to hand them back, but she refused them. They are yours, Stephen, she insisted. I have not written since the day you left, not one word. The words left me when I knew you were no longer going to be with me. She stopped to take a deep breath. Then come, he begged. Be my family. This is my world, she gestured around her. My children belong here as I do. We have pretended, you and I. In our garden, we raised our roses, but they have thorns, and we have been pierced. Spilled blood is all we have left of our fantasy. Stephen hung his head, unable to argue. And this, Amisha said, seeing his pain matched hers, is a village that you have no use for. Amisha, he began, his hurt clear. We can make a life together. Where? Amisha demanded. In your country, I am brown. In mine, you are hated. There is no place for us. He started to say something, but Amisha interrupted him. Please, let me speak while I am still able. She laid her hands on his arms, gathering strength from him because she had none left. I wish I could make a life with you. I will never know happiness again without you. You would be safe with me. I give you my word. It would be without my children, and I cannot choose you over them. So, I will surrender to the rules I must live by, but in doing so, I promise you and the gods that only if we are ever together will I write again. They put me in this world, and now I shall live in it, Amisha vowed, left with nothing but anger. That is not a sacrifice you can make. You have my heart, Stephen,
she sobbed. And without it, I have no tales to tell.
Amisha felt her world shift and her balance disappear. The sense of loss was stronger than the happiness they had shared. Her stories allowed her to create fantasies and determine endings, but this tale had only one possible conclusion, and she was helpless to reverse it, powerless to alter its predetermined course. Fate had exacted its payment for allowing them to have known such happiness. They were to be left with nothing but memories of a love they would never know again. Stephen caressed her cheek with his hand and brought her close. He laid his hand on her belly.
I would give anything for this child to be mine, he whispered. Even though it is not, the child is part of you, and because of that, I wish it all the happiness life has to offer.
He bent down and brushed her lips with his own. Then, releasing her, he walked out, refusing to turn and see her crumpled on the floor, broken and alone, holding the child that was the only part of him she had left.
Jaya. 42. I swipe at the tears as Ravi finishes. We walk together along the river's edge. She loved him so much.
Yes, he says softly. Their love was true and binding.
Does my mother know? Though I assume the answer is no, I still ask. That Stephen is her real father.
She was never told, Ravi says quietly.
Why not tell her?
She would have been loved completely, and yet she has lived her life never knowing how wanted she was.
Why wait all this time?
I couldn't, Ravi says slowly. Until now.
Because of my grandfather? I ask.
Yes.
She has a right to know. Angry at the circumstances before my time, I yearn for my mother to have had the love and support of her parents. She deserved to know her father.
The secrets of my mother's past have lain dormant for two generations. The father she assumed was hers never wanted her, while the father who didn't know of her existence would have loved her unconditionally. I grieve for the choice my grandmother had to make, and the secret my mother never learned. I am empty for never having had a child, as is my mother for never having had her father. In our loss, I am linked to my mother, the woman I am just starting to know.
Stephen would have been a good father, Ravi says, his voice broken. He was an exceptionally good man.
Is he still alive? I ask, hopeful.
No, he whispers, and disappointment slices through me.
Not anymore. I think neither could live in this world without the other.
I choke back a sob at the profoundness of their connection. When I came to India, I never expected to hear such a story.
Maybe it is why you came, Ravi says. Your grandmother hoped I would tell her daughter the tale, but maybe you were the one meant to hear it, yes?
Maybe, I say. I'm telling my mother bits and pieces of the story.
Will you tell her this? He asks.
Not yet. She will need my father by her side as she hears of her heritage. When I go back, I'll tell her everything. In the distance, women are waist deep in the water as they wash their clothes. Children play nearby, splashing one another as they bathe in the warm water. Men lead their cows to the banks to drink. After spending the morning on the story, Ravi recommended we take a walk.
Watch your step.
He leads the way away from the edge of the river and toward the grass.
There can be snakes hidden underneath.
What? I stop and search the ground for slithering creatures. Snakes?
Yes.
Unconcerned, Ravi continues to casually uproot the rocks as we walk.